September, what were we, 6th today? September 6th? 2016, and Mr. Young, financial director.
Yeah, well,
good. It must be important we have an open today.
That's right. Yeah, I want to spend the next hour predominantly going through the 2016 budget so you can become comfortable as to where the monies reside and what are restricted revenues. Our accounting system can be overwhelming, but it's governmental accounting. So those that like numbers, this is going to be just for you. And for those who do not, I'm hopeful that I'll be able to put it into digestible portions so you don't get kind of just overwhelmed by the magnitude of it. Didn't hang out some three-ring binders. I'd like to start off on the inside pocket. There's two sheets of paper, and one of them is an 8.5 by 14. This is the only 8.5 by 14 paper we have, so hopefully it'll be the only one you see.
Do you want to introduce our guests?
Absolutely. Let's take a moment here. We'll introduce our finance director to be. I guess I don't know if that's the Siri, Circa Solomon. So she's kind enough to come tonight and sit through my presentation. And the good thing is that at our next study session, it'll probably be more Circa's role, so you'd be able to truly see the difference between a fill-in finance director and the real thing. So my hope is that we'll also give some background to Circa today as far as how our accounting structure is similar, but also perhaps a little different than Linden, mostly due to some of our unique revenues, solid waste being one of them, but probably 90% of what you're going to hear and see will be probably exactly what you know from Linden. Yeah, feel free to
have a chair
anywhere you want.
Over here where Matthew's.
Yeah, we have a spot here. that will be your spot. That's true.
And
pending council approval.
That's right.
Yeah. Feel free to fully participate today. Feel free to fully participate.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have questions, please feel free to ask, because I can only assume that others will probably have the same questions as well. As I mentioned, we'll start off with the
Stump the treasurer that he occasionally do.
No, we'll try to ease into that.
Let's get her hired first. They don't want to scare her.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
You know you're not actually underneath that.
Right.
Welcome to Groundhog Day. So the large 8.5 by 14 sheet is in the pocket that's in the very front of your binders. Absolutely. Why don't we go around and you can read the names that are on. Start off maybe with Brent.
Brent Goodrich.
All right. The quiz is later coming from the
first. This is my first time in my third year.
Teresa Taylor, we met at the interview.
Keith Olson.
Greg Hansen. We also met.
Rebecca Zarr.
And we've met.
And I believe you've met Susan, our city clerk, and Riley, our public information officer, and you may have met, if not seen, both of them as well. All right.
That's, and Kathy's on the big screen.
Yeah, Kathy is she's a...
I think you met her at interviews also, right?
Yes, exactly.
And Joe of Discover Ferndale, our local media.
And our IT consultant that fixes
it. The one you made.
All right. Well, turning to the large sheet, the way our funds are organized are actually by design. There is a manual put out by the State Auditor's Office called the BARS Manual, Budgeting and Accounting Reporting System. And when they produced it in hard copy, it was a very large three-ring binder. Now I think it's online. But what it tries to do, it tries to bring continuity to all governments in the state of Washington. There are differences between how counties and school districts account for their dollars, but the basic framework is still the same. And what I've tried to do is our funds are broken down into series. That is, there's numbers. The current expense fund, the general fund, which is the synonymous, that's the one you're probably most familiar with. That's for the police and parks and community development. But that's one fund, albeit our largest fund as far as the components. But the other ones, you can see in the general fund, we also have current expense 001, then we have the left reserve, which is a reserve for our retired policemen, our solid waste fund, and our Pioneer Pavilion Fund. At the end of the year, when we put together our annual financial report, all of these OO funds are combined into one. So even though we account for LEFT separately and solid waste separately and Pioneer Pavilion separately, we could, if we wanted to, make them yet more departments within the current expense fund. But especially due to LEFT being somewhat special when it comes to paying for the retired police officers, and solid waste is being so large and pavilion being new, we thought it'd be best to separate those at least in your monthly expenditures. So the other ones on here, there's special revenue, which are all the 100 series funds. There's our debt service, which are all the 200 series. Capital projects are 300. The proprietary or enterprise funds are the 400s. That's where water and sewer is. Then we have a couple internal service. We collect money each month from all the departments to replace their vehicles and replace their computers. So each month there's a small amount that comes out of all the budgets. And then the last one's an agency fund. Much of the funds that we collect through our court system, we don't keep. Most of those monies goes to the state. Some actually go to the county. So this agency fund is we're holding money for others. So monthly, the court clerk deposits all the money into the agency fund. We retain our portion, and then we monthly send off the portion to the state and the county. So it's just a pass-through. So it's not really our funds, but it's someone else's. The proprietary funds, water, sewer, storm, they're a little unique because they are most like businesses. Insofar as, you know, they provide a service, they have their revenues and expenses, and in larger cities, you would actually have a regular balance sheet. But here, the unique thing about the proprietary funds is I said we have these debt service funds, the 200-level funds, except for the proprietary funds. When we issue water bonds or sewer bonds or if we ever issued storm bonds, they would be accounted for, the debt service would be accounted for in a separate 400 fund. So really, whenever we do a new capital project, we create a new 300 fund. You can see there, Fund 309, Star Park. Once we finish the Star Park, once we receive all the reimbursements, once that project is completely done, we'll close that fund. So it's quite usual for the 300 funds, the capital project funds, to be created. They do what they're going to do. They build what they say they're going to build. And then it disappears off the books. The other ones tend to stay around longer, except perhaps maybe the 200 debt service funds. When those pay off, they go away. One of the things you'll see in both the debt service as well as the proprietary, there is both a redemption fund. For our debt, we pay our principal payments once a year, normally in November, and we pay interest payments twice a year on our bonds. For that, there's both a redemption fund, that's literally where the money goes into and the payments are made to the bondholders. And then there's a guarantee fund. In the proprietary funds, they're called reserve funds. You're normally required to hold back or have on the side 1 year's worth of debt service as a reserve. So that way, if you suffer some sort of situation where whatever the revenue source is for that debt goes away or is temporarily interrupted, you have a backup. So many times when we establish debt, we also add a little bit more into the bond to literally carve out or receive a little bit more funding that goes into that reserve fund. And then at the very end, in 20 years, that last debt service payment is usually made out of the reserve fund. So you create the reserve fund at the very front to guarantee the payments. At the very end, that's the last money you use. The hope is that when it's all said and done 20 years later, the debt's paid for, the cash is exhausted, and you're good to go. So the debt service funds come and go as we issue debt. The capital project funds come and go as we create projects. But the other ones, especially the OO series and the 100 series, these are funds that stay around. They will not change. You can add some, but for the most part, they will be here in 10 years, in 20 years. The 100 series are special revenues, and they call them special revenues because they are revenues for a specific dedicated purpose. For example, Park Mitigation 102, Traffic Mitigation 104. We'll be talking about the traffic mitigation payments later tonight. Those TIF fees, those traffic impact fees, or those park impact fees, go into those funds, and they only go into those funds. They don't go through anywhere else. And those funds for parks can only be used for park construction, and the Transportation Improvement Fund, the traffic mitigation, can only be used for traffic. So even though we collect between $30 and $40 million a year, once you start segregating them into what their purpose is, the amount of money that is truly discretionary diminishes, especially when it comes to if you want to spend something. A lot of times one of the questions we ask is, where is the money going to come from? If we want to build a park, hopefully you take it out of park mitigation. You want to build a road, you take it out of one of the traffic mitigation, and you create a special project fund. So you'll see these numbers throughout the budget. And just realize that there is actually a logic to them. And I know I keep a sheet similar to this, not that you'll probably need it as much, but I keep it around just so when I go, hotel, motel, what number was that? I can look on the list. So as we start going through the budget, we'll start going through each one of these funds. So you don't have to worry about, okay, you know, where's the traffic mitigation? We'll get to that when we talk about the Traffic Mitigation Fund 104. But for the most part, the bigger things we do, the things that don't tend to have separate revenue sources, is accounted for in the general fund. And that's the other sheet that was in that pocket, the other loose sheet. Again, this is accounting parlance. Numbers mean something. And here, as later on, as you look through our expenditure and our revenue books, when you actually get the thick ones and it's all those jumbles of numbers, the number makes a difference. So like I listed here, within the current expense fund, you can see all the sub-departments of current expense. 001 being legislature, which is yourself, so your expenditures are in the 001. 002, municipal court. These, again, are prescribed by the auditor's office. So you know, we couldn't put our legal in with the parks expenditures. They're separate. So just think of the general fund as having all these separate departments in it. But what's unique is that unlike these other funds where you might have the money come in for a capital project and there'll be a special capital project, so you'll see the revenue come in for Thornton and then you'll see the expenditures for Thornton, in the general fund, we don't have monies that come in specifically for the police or for the park operations or community development. We take pretty much property tax and sales tax and our utility taxes. Those are the big three sources that goes into arguably a large pot that all of these expenditures are out of. So sometimes I've been in cities where we go through a rather laborious process of all the departments coming forward. So you might have the police department on one night and the fire department on the next night. And they are essentially battling or fighting over the same pot of money. Because monies we spend in parks, we can spend on police and fire, even though we're out of the contract business with the fire department. So as you all know, especially those who have been around for a while, the hard part in doing the budget is the allocation of the expenditures within the current expense fund. That's when we'll talk about the payment to the nonprofits and some of the other ones. For the most part, most of what we do is personnel, but those decisions are not necessarily ones that we revisit every year from a standpoint of how many cops do we want this year, because we naturally want to have all the ones we had last year. But we do talk about other projects as far as payments to the Chamber of Commerce and some other things as well. So you'll be able to see, and I've broken down here in the booklet, how within the general fund, each of these departments have their own revenue side and expenditure side. Just to make it a little more complicated, we have a detailed revenue report and we have a detailed expenditure report. They're two very thick documents that come out every month. So if you want to know, this happens to be the expenditure report for July for all of our funds. So we have 35 pages here of numbers. I mean, it's an accountant's dream, these type of things. But if you want to know how much money is in a fund, you pretty much have to look at the revenue side and the expenditure side. It's all not in one place, which I know can be a little maddening for folks when you want to find out how much do I have left to spend.
Craig, since it's an introduction, there are some important acronyms in that support community. Could you really quickly cover those?
Absolutely.
Maybe people know it there, but they are important.
Oh, let's see. Well, I'm just looking down the list right here. There's the LEOFF, left retirees. That is law enforcement and firefighters. Over the years, it's a retirement program. Over the years, the firefighters and police have one retirement system. Other employees, in fact, all the employees here, are in a different, we're in the PERS system. There's also a retirement system for teachers, TERS system. So all of these retirement programs have different benefits, and they both require a payment by the employer and the employee. Over time, they've realized that some of the older retirement systems were a little too rich when it came to payouts, from the standpoint that the state was having a hard time collecting, or believe they would have had a hard time collecting enough to pay all those future benefits. So they started creating, there used to be left one, which was the original one. Then we had left two. Now I think there's even left three, or maybe even, I know PERS, there's PERS one, PERS two, and PERS threes. And normally the benefits kind of erode a little bit over time. But it has to do more as when you are hired. So for left, our left employees, we have, I believe, three retired policemen. They're all in the left one system. And as I mentioned, the left one system is probably the richest of all the systems, to the standpoint that we are liable for paying pretty much all of their health care needs until they die. Home health care, nursing home, I mean, you name it, we cover it. That's why they got rid of left one, because they soon found out that these cities have these enormous liabilities out there. We have three, which is not bad. Some cities have dozens. And so right now what we do is we actually put a little bit more money into our left retiree fund than what we pay out each year, with the hope of building up a little bit of cushion. So even though all three of our retired policemen are healthy, active adults, at some point their health care needs will start to escalate. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to be in a position to be able to fund those. So that's what LEF is. Looking down here, I see under the 200 series, there's the Labonte LID Redeem Fund and the Labonte LID Guarantee Fund. Not only do we love acronyms, sometimes we use the same acronyms in different things. In this case, LID stands for Local Improvement District. We want to go out and put in a water system or a sewer system or build a road. We actually charge over time the people whose new road that goes by, so they benefit from it. LID is also low-impact development, so when Wendy's up here and she talks about LID techniques, she's talking about rain gardens and such like that, not in the local improvement district. Under the 200, we see the Labonte GO bond, the 2010 GO bond. Those GO stands for General Obligation Bonds. When you go out to the bond market, you pretty much have three types of debt that you can issue. You can issue GO debt, where you're pledging the general revenues of the city, all the monies that we get in. Then you can have revenue debt, and that's really what you get for water and sewer, because water and sewer has its own unique, specialized revenue source. So we issue revenue bonds. And then there's assessment debt. That's that LID, where we actually have an assessment district where we charge the folks every year. Interestingly enough, I guess if you find it interesting, we get lower interest rates on GO debt than we do on revenue debt. It always seems strange to me. I figured revenue debt would be stronger because you have the dedicated water revenue. But the bondholders like the idea of pledging the entire financial status of the city on the repayment. So we get a little bit lower interest rate on GO bonds than we do on. And then there's also, you can have voted bonds, which we have down at the bottom. Fund 220, the 2014 Library Redemption Fund. If you remember, we asked the voters, and they actually did approve that. So there's a separate, unique property tax levy that goes against the folks here in town that we use exclusively to pay back the library debt, while some of the other one is just, we have what's called councilmanic debt. You, just by a vote of the council, can indebt the city up to a certain percentage of our tax assessed valuation. The only issue with Councilmatic debt is you'd also need to figure out how you're going to pay for it. So to the extent that we do have solid waste revenue or some other revenue, you can feel comfortable issuing Councilmatic debt that doesn't go to the voters for approval. The good thing about voter-approved debt is that the voters are also saying, and add it to my tax bill. So they are guaranteeing the repayment through their own property taxes. Over here under the 300 series, you see REIT first percentage and REIT second percentage. REIT is the real estate excise tax. In Washington State, whenever you sell a piece of property, there's various real estate excise taxes that are paid. The legislature created the first quarter, and then they created the second quarter, and then they said, wait a minute, maybe we only need one quarter. So those cities that took advantage of both of the quarter percentages get to keep them forever. But there's some cities out there that only get one quarter of 1% rather than both quarters of 1%. And there are some limitations on what you can spend it on. Fund 309 Star Park, to this day, I still do not know what STAR stands for. But if it's an acronym, it's a good one because people seem to remember.
Everyone who volunteers for Star Park is a star.
And then there's Fund 347, the main Labonte. It says RAB, that's a roundabout. That's just nomenclature for roundabout because I couldn't do it all out. Over here on the 500 series, you see the computer ER&R and the equipment ER&R. ER&R stands for equipment rental and revolving. So what you do is when the cops actually get a bill, they in essence rent their vehicles each month. There's a calculation that's done that the same thing for the Parks Department, the same thing for water and sewer. They are charged each month a replacement fee. That's why it's a rental and revolving. Theoretically, by the time all the cop cars and all the parks vehicles wear down to nothing, you've collected through that monthly interfund transfer enough cash to go and replace those vehicles. So that's what the ER and R funds do. I think that's it as far as acronyms on this sheet. Yeah. So then going back to the other sheet, and we'll go through this. This is, again, where all the various sub-departments within the city reside. So if you want to know, say, where parks are, you can look through the revenue or expenditure guide and look for 00116, and that's where everything will be. Actually, turning to the three-ring binder itself, the pages are numbered except for the very first one. And the very first one is a sheet that we produce each month. This happens to be July. We actually have one now for August. It's a little more updated, but the numbers are pretty. What this does is this tells you with one little snapshot how much cash we have. As of July 23rd, we have a little bit, almost $15.5 million in the city. And what it does is it breaks it down as to how much is literally in our checking account. And then up in the top middle, you see the LGIP. That's the local government investment pool. What it is that the state treasurer buys investments on a very liquid basis. And you can, on a daily basis, shift money to the LGIP. You can say, hey, I'm sending you $350,000. Or you can say, send me back $350,000 because I have bills due today. So the good thing about the LGIP, the local government investment pool, it's highly liquid, reasonable interest rates. Interest rates aren't what they used to be, so we really don't generate that much interest. But it's better than the money just sitting around in a shoebox. So in this case, you can move the money back and forth from the pool and manage your account. We like to see, you see under the checking account, it says $2,653,000. We like to keep about $2 million or a little bit more than that in our checking account to avoid bank fees. Because even though the bank fees are somewhat moderate, they can actually outstrip the interest we get on investments. And then so you can see what's in our checking account, literally down at the bank, what's in the LGIP investments, and then you have total investments, and then total checking and investments. So you really kind of see just what we have where, and not surprisingly, you know, some of the larger balances, we have about $1.5 million in current expense. And if you look down on sewer, we have about $7 million. The reason why we have that much there, it's a little bit more than what we would normally carry. A couple years ago, we issued bonds. And so we're, for that's if you remember, we're doing our pump stations and everything. So that dollar amount, that'll be working its way down, and it'll probably get down to the $2 million range or some $2 to $3 million, which is a more normal cash carrying amount for the sewer fund. Anything else on this? You can see the investments are normally in, you know, they don't have to be in necessarily round dollar amounts, but sometimes they are. And we just move it around. This is something that is done on a daily basis and then certainly on a monthly basis where we go and be sure that we balance the accounts and be sure. So if you ever wonder, you know, how much money we have in park mitigation, this is done every month. And I believe we post it to the website every month.
Monthly.
So you can see that park mitigation, we have $55,000 in park mitigation. We have $342,000 back in July 23rd for traffic mitigation. So you can kind of get an idea. Sometimes these balances start working their way up because we're saving the money for a project, and we use it for a lot of it for matching grants. The next set of graphs, page, 6 through 15, these are the graphs that you see, or if you do see them, on a monthly basis. And what it really gives you an idea is these are some of our more of our larger and potentially volatile revenues. And these are the ones that we keep our eye on. One thing you should note on page 1, the reason the green line is last year's actual, the blue line is this year's budget. And the reason why there's such a large difference between last year's actual and this year's budget is that if you remember, by us joining the fire district, we cut our property tax levy in half. So we used to get about close to $2.5 million in property tax. We now get closer to about 1.6 because we lowered it so the initial hit to our citizens would be the same. So now the fire district is actually levying a property tax assessment against Ferndale residents directly on their property tax bill rather than through a contract sending a bill to us. One of the great advantages to this, if you remember, every year there was this waiting and worrying that Mark and I would have about how much is the fire district bill going to be. Because it just wasn't limited to 1% or 3%. We had years where it was 12 and 14 and 16% increases. And there were times when it was tough to kind of fit it all into the budget. But now we don't have that volatility. But we did see a rather dramatic drop in what we would expect our property taxes revenue to be, which is really no issue because we no longer pay the fire district bill, so it's kind of a no harm, no foul.
Eliminate the 1%. I'm in limits, too.
Yes.
Kind of a question along property tax. BP's thing with the counties.
Yep.
I know it affects the fire district a lot. How does it affect the city?
It affects us as well. In fact, I was talking with Chief Russell just the other day about this. My understanding is that there's a potential settlement out there. The issue was out at Cherry Point, they have literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of infrastructure that they either build or replace or maintain on an annual basis. And so what ends up happening is that they may have a $200 million project, which would by itself add $200 million to the value of the utility and therefore the taxes, but they might take down or eliminate some other infrastructure they had out there. And accountants being what they are, there's always a tussle every year between the assessor's office and the utilities commission and the utilities out of BP as to, okay, we know you added $50 million, but now you're saying you took off $400 million? How is that? So there was some back and forth over the last few years over exactly what the value of the removed assets were, and therefore what was the net valuation of the utilities out of Cherry Point. It became important because if the fire district levies 50 cents for every $1,000 of valuation, taking a few $100 million off the tax rolls doesn't change how much the fire district gets. It just changes who pays those. So we were seeing our tax assessed valuation every year rise, and the fire district tax assessed valuation, because of Cherry Point, go up and then maybe go way down. So we had a contract that said that whatever their levy rate was out in the district, we would pay it and apply it to our tax assessed valuation. So if their levy rate went from 35 cents to 40 cents, and our valuation jumped by 20%, the math between those two numbers meant that the increase to us was enormous. So there were some large increases over the years. How that might affect us now that there's a potential settlement is that they will go back and say, okay, for 2014 or whatever year or years it was, this is the number of what Cherry Point should have been valued at. And therefore, Fire District, this is what your levy rate should have been. The Fire District will then turn around to us and say, okay, now given the 32 cents instead of 38 cents, and your valuation back in 2014 was $1 billion, we owe you back. So there's actually going to be some refunds. There's going to be refunds that are, the money's going to come to the Fire District and also some other taxing districts as well. But then they will turn around and either lower the levy rate for all of their customers in the next years, or if it's possible and if the dollars are big enough, they could actually go through and calculate on a home-by-home basis how much of a rebate everyone. That tends to be rather laborious, so usually they usually kind of just credit against future levies. But long story short, my understanding is that there has been a settlement, which means that we may get a check from the Fire District. I don't expect it to be enormous, but hey, every dollar helps. So yeah, that was the situation over there. Any other questions? We can go through the revenue graphs. You can see sales tax and mitigation. This is one we watch closely. Luckily, we're not as sales tax dependent as Bellingham, as Linden, for that matter. So when the Great Recession happened, we didn't have as much to lose. So as a result, and because we had our solid waste tax, we were able to fare through that economic downturn, I think, a little easier than some other cities. But sales tax has grown every year, and so this is something we watch rather closely to ensure that we're still on track. Then there's the TBD sales tax, and that's, as you're aware, it is just a separate one that goes in for transportation. Our utility taxes, which is a large amount, probably about the second or third largest revenue source we have. Our permit fee revenue, on page 6 and page 7, you'll see park impact fees and traffic impact fees. These are the crazy ones, insofar as just because you collected $5 last year doesn't mean you're going to get $5 next year. It literally depends on the amount of projects. If we had a large box retailer come in, retail doesn't pay park mitigation. Only homes pay park mitigation because homes generate kids who use parks. Stores don't normally generate children. So in that case, the logic is retail, manufacturing, industrial do not pay park impact fees. Only homes do. But everybody pays traffic impact fees. And it's based on the number of vehicle trips. And I know you guys are probably excited later on tonight to delve into that topic, but it's per trip. Sometimes we literally look it up in a book. Every home has so many trips. Every gas station normally generates so many trips. And so there are books out there that tell you what the... So you can see on here the effect of, and I believe this is probably the Meadows, I've seen heads go up and down. So with this large spike, it's corresponding both on the traffic impact as well as the park impact fees.
And I was just talking to Yori about that one. That the Meadows, when they came in and did their initial phase one plat, that was one-third of the lots that was in right. On tonight's consent is phase two and phase three, which will be an additional 100 lots. So it'll be even more dramatic than what's displayed on that.
Exactly.
On the next iteration.
And then later on, as these lots start selling and they start building the homes, that's when we'll start seeing the permit revenue, the development, the development review monies. So there's kind of an echo effect of a large subdivision. You see it first in traffic impact fees and park impact fees, and then you eventually see it on a little bit more of a measured note through permit fees.
Another thing on the impact fees is having a healthy impact fee revenue is good, but the other way of looking at it is you're that much closer to those projects. You're that much closer to spending that money because each of those are creating the impact. So,
right.
Yeah, it's great if we're healthy, but it probably means that we've got a big budget item coming up.
Yeah, because there was actually a state law that says you have to spend impact fees within 6 years of their collection, or you get to give them back to whomever paid it. Most cities are pretty darn good about spending their monies within 6 years. It would be a good problem, I guess, to have if you had so much traffic impact and park impact fees coming in. But as all of you know, it's not that hard at all to think about park projects and transportation improvement projects. So these monies, even though the monies ebb and flow, we try to come out with good projects that will use that money in a timely manner. The next one here is on page 8, is the REIT. That's that real estate excise tax. This is something we have seen this sort of a graph for the last few years. As property's been selling in Ferndale, we've seen that almost every year the arc is a little sharper. The prices are a little higher because it's a percentage of the sales price. So we continue to see good, strong real estate excise tax monies, which is, again, a sign of an economy where property is turning, which is normally a good thing. Then the next few ones are water sewer connection fees, water sewer rate revenue. You can, in fact, all the way up to page 13 are different variations of. And we segregate out water connection fees from water rate revenue because not unlike the traffic impact fees and the park impact fees, the sewer and water connection fees happen once. You build a house, you connect once. So those are those one-time connection fee revenues. Sometimes for a large industrial or commercial, the fees could be rather large. But then over time, not unlike the other ones as well, they pay their water bill each month and their sewer bill each month. So then you see that kind of that constant flow of rate revenue. So you have both rate revenue and then you have connection fee revenue. And we'll probably talk more about that in the coming months when it comes time to spend a little bit more time on our expansion of our wastewater treatment plant and the expansion of our well fields. Because theoretically, connection fees, and this applies to both park impact fees, traffic impact fees, water connection fees, sewer connection fees, all of those fees are based on what you think the future capital cost to expand the system is going to be. They're not intended, in a perfect world, connection fee and impact fees, especially connection fees, water and sewer, do not pay for ongoing maintenance. It's your existing customer base. It's built into all of your water and sewer bills. That's where the money theoretically should really come from to maintain the system, to operate the system. Sometimes you can actually get enough connection revenue to do a capital project, but especially in the case of water and sewer, where you can't expand the sewer plant a little bit each year. You know, you tend to expand the sewage treatment plant, or in this case, I just saw in the newspaper, Bellingham's going to a brand new water treatment. I mean, you don't do those things incrementally. You tend to do it in a big slug. That's why it's very common for these utility funds to issue debt. You issue 20-year bonds because you're building an asset that'll last 20 years. Sometimes you can pay for it out of future connection fees, but ideally you probably need to also think about rate revenue as well because those connection fees are so mercurial in that regard. So that's what these are. Storm drainage revenue is pretty straightforward. Solid waste, this is the last one on page 15. This is, for Cirque's benefit, this is unique revenue to Ferndale. We have the two transfer stations down at the south end of the city, RDS and Allied Waste, I think it is. Doesn't matter. Anyway, we have a tax that it's, in essence, it's a B&O tax because it's based on their gross revenues. So we also have a franchise agreement with SSC here in the city. So because of the combination of a B&O tax for the waste haulers down at Slater Road, and a franchise agreement with the waste hauler in the city, our citizens don't pay these storm taxes. solid waste taxes. Only Bellingham and the county, everybody else gets to pay it. We, the whatever taxes are embedded into our franchise agreement are reflected in your garbage bills. So it's a large revenue. Last year was almost $1.7 million. It has grown over the years. It's 13% this year. It's scheduled to go to 13.5% next year, and it actually goes up a little bit more over that. And when we get into the budget, you'll see that we have carved out specific positions here at the city that are paid for out of the solid waste fund. So the other way to think about it is if we didn't have this, all those people that you see listed under the solid waste fund, we probably couldn't afford.
Didn't they open up a second solid waste facility in Linden, though? And how would that affect them?
They're working through it. I think they're still in the permitting phase of that. And my understanding, talking to the operators down in Slater, they don't expect it to really impact our revenues very much at all. It's a smaller area of the county. The vast majority of the waste will still be coming here, and in fact, some of the waste couldn't go to Linden and then come here, depending on how they decide to haul it. But
yeah, and I spoke to Carter. Added to that, they've raised their solid waste rate from 5 cents to 7 cents. My math says that's a 40% increase just in the solid waste part, not in the recycling, not in the bringing wood out there and all sorts of stuff. And so we should see how they do that.
That's good to know.
How often do we renegotiate with SSC?
We just earlier this year, probably about 3 or 4, maybe 6 months earlier, I think it was earlier this year, we actually adopted a new franchise agreement with them. So I think it's a 20-year agreement, if I remember right.
I just meant as far as their fee that they charge the resident.
Because
in theory, I can see, okay, whatever their contract period is for us, and then we've raised solid waste tax, which is they're paying it, or somebody's paying that. And so whenever the thing comes due, they could say, okay, Ferndale, instead of $65 every 2 months, it's now going to be $70 every 2 months because of the solid waste tax.
Yeah, the SSC trucks that go to Slater do not pay the solid waste tax because they pay us a franchise fee. So that's just the arrangement of it. In our franchise fee, the one we just re-upped here a few months ago, we've also built in, I think it's every 5 years, 4 or 5 years, an escalator on how much their franchise fee is. So they have to go to the Utility and Transportation Commission every year, well, anyone does, when they want to raise those type of rates. My understanding is that due to the long-term nature of the franchise agreement and the slow incremental increase in the franchise fees, I would be surprised if there were large increases in the future. They will need to replace their fleet. That's one of the reasons why they wanted a renewal, so they would have that way of have that long-term contract in place so they can go buy those $300,000 garbage trucks and be able to pay for them. So, yeah, it's a huge revenue source for us.
It's the only industry I've found in my public service that doesn't really, they're not really bothered by this tax. It doesn't bother us all. We easily pass along. Customers don't mind. It doesn't affect our business at all. Right. In fact, when they proposed to go to Linden, RDS spoke to Mayor Court. I said, we hope that you'll charge the same tax as Ferndale. It's not going to be any difference. It's 13%. It's sort of the dirty gold of the city.
Yeah, so that's kind of an overview of where a lot of the revenues are. And as far as 2016 goes, most of the numbers in here are through July. We now have them through August. I was looking at those today, and they look just as strong as July's. We are pretty much on track for our revenues and our expenses. There's two revenue sources, and we'll get into that a little bit later, in the general fund. One is below our estimate, but another one is well above its estimate. And so when you net them out, it's really a pretty good situation. So our revenues are strong, our cash position is strong. I think we're in a pretty good stead for the rest of this year to have the revenues and expenditures come in as planned. On page 16 of your Now this is now we're kind of turning into, at least for the remainder of tonight, I'd like to spend a little bit of time in the current expense fund talking about the revenue side of the current expense fund. So on page 16, you can see there's 4 years of actual numbers, the 2016 budgeted, and the currently what we've projected or put into the 2017 budget. And over on the left-hand side, you can see taxes, licenses, and permits. Those colors represent the detail on the following pages. So, for example, if you look at page 16, you see taxes in red. On page 17 are the components within the current expense fund that makes up the total tax dollars that you see on page 16. So for 2016, you can see that we believe we're going to be bringing in $4,364,399. Realize, again, that's down from 2005 because we cut our property tax levy in half. So we're going to bring in about $4.3 million in taxes. Now, on page 17, you can see how that $3.4 million is broken down between property tax, sales tax, EMS, and then the utility taxes. And I think you can also get a feel for the relative size of these revenues, because when you start adding up all the utility taxes, they actually exceed our property tax and probably even get extremely close to our sales tax. And you can also kind of see over time the trend of those taxes generally have gone up. And right now, the projected 2017 numbers are mathematically 3% more than what 2016 budget was. We'll come back and we'll refine those instead of just kind of a coarse 3% escalation. We'll continue to track these individual revenues to see if there isn't something that's coming in a little bit different than what last year. In fact, a good one, that varied, you see a water, sewer, storm, utility tax in 2015, we received $705,000. This year already we've got $669,000, so we'll probably exceed that number. But you can see when we increase rates, the water sewer rates, the tax goes up, just like when the solid waste folks increase their tipping fees. So page 17 is a detail of the taxes on line 16.
Where's Comcast or Dish and all those guys on 17?
They're actually under... We'll get to those. Oh, here it is. Okay. Actually, page 18. You can see the franchise fees, the second line. So right now, the franchise fees that we get are listed under that second line. But as far as the Comcast tax, that's on page 17 under the phone, cell phone utility tax, and the other one is, I think that's under that one there.
So all the internet and the whatever.
All those.
Dish,
right.
And all those things all fall under that phone one.
Now, a little deeper in here, I've actually cut out and pasted in the detailed line items from our revenue report. So while on page 17 you see something for cell phone, on later on that may be made up of three or four or five different, Comcast being one, someone else being something else. So as my hope is that as you kind of get a grasp for the magnitude of these numbers, you can just go down a little bit deeper and say, okay, now what makes up the taxes? And then you can actually go a little bit deeper and say, okay, now what are all the real parts of the taxes? So page 18 is license and permits. And these are our business license, franchise fees, single and multifamily building permits. And again, you can kind of just see over time, the numbers have been fairly steady. We've come out of the Great Recession in a fairly strong manner. We've not just bolted to the top. It's been this incremental growth. And you can see that in these numbers, how they've just been slowly marching their way upwards. Right now, and you can see a difference between 2016 and 2017, we're going to be looking to see which one of these permits perhaps could be sustainable, and so the 2017 numbers may be something we could look at. But you always want to be very conservative on revenues and realistic on expenditures, because it's a lot easier to deal with a little bit of extra revenue than there is not enough revenue. Page 19 is intergovernmental. And if some of these seem relatively small in dollars, it's again because the State Auditor's Office says you shall account for these type of revenues under intergovernmental. So these are the ones. Even though we're only talking $132,000 in total, we are required to account for it separately. Page 20 is the charges for service. And you can see in here that, like at the very bottom, it says central service fees. Those are those rental charges we charge the Parks Department and the Police Department and Public Works for their vehicles and equipment. So some of these are relatively small. It says school SRO, that's a school resource officer. We actually assign one of our policemen full-time to one or more of the schools during the school year, and the school district pays for that service. Then you can see some of the other ones, probation fees. One of the things I noted before, and in fact we can go back a couple pages to license and permits. Right now, our single family permits are coming in less than what we had envisioned. I think we rolled in some of the meadows coming in quicker than it's come in so far. So on page 18, you can see that from 2015 to the budgeted 2016, we went from 150 to 323,000. We're probably going to be a little bit shy on that. But on page 20, when you look at the development review fees, this is just budgeted, and we'll look at the actual later. We've budgeted for 2016 160, and we've brought in, we're getting close to $300,000. So even though we didn't get the single-family permits we thought we were going to get, we did get the development review fees for all of the developments in the city this year.
Can we go back to the school SRO?
Mm-hmm.
We don't get what that costs us. We get a portion of it paid.
Right, because he's only in the school when the school's there.
It's not a wash, so I don't want anybody thinking that it's a wash, because we underwrite that.
Exactly. So when we see SRO $52,000, we pay our officer probably closer to $80,000.
Why was it so high in 2012?
Yeah, we actually had more than one.
Wow. Okay. So it's not a difference in the amount that we were reimbursed. Okay.
It is one of these revenues that you have to remember about, because the school district rolls the SRO, the school resource officer cost, into their M&O levy. And as you know, the M&O levy only goes out every few years. So if you want to increase, and we've done this in the past, when we increased it from 47 up to the 52, we had to give the school a year or two notice so then they could roll that bigger number into their local M&O levy. So it's just something we just have to remember. We just can't increase it every year because the school district can't turn around and increase their M&O levy every year. But you're right. The SR officer is in the schools 8 months out of the year, whenever school is there. Other times of the year, he's out doing what would be considered normal patrol.
But we only get the 52 grand or whatever it is
right. For
the 8 months.
Yes.
Not the other.
Okay. Right. The thought is there's some benefit to having, you know, officer friendly in the school and what have you. So, but that's something you can increase with some notification to the school. Page 21, fines and forfeitures. These are almost exclusively, well, they are exclusively, the charges, the monies that we get through our municipal court. And these are the dollars that we get to keep. It says JIS fees. There's actually an information system that all defendants are charged that the state uses to track everybody. So that's just some small fees there. Otherwise, this is broken down into the various categories. It's pretty straightforward. Page 22 is miscellaneous transfers and loans. And that's something that is perhaps unique to governmental accounting. If for example, we earlier this year you approved the local program, which is a loan program through the state, and we were going to buy a bunch of equipment. Well, we needed to go buy the equipment, but the loan proceeds weren't going to be ready for a while. So we have an interfund loan between the current expense fund and the equipment rental fund. Once the state gives us the loan proceeds, we'll pay the money back to the general fund. But what you'll see in our books is you'll see a transfer, a revenue into the equipment fund for the interfund loan. Then you'll see an expenditure of when they actually buy the equipment. And then you'll see a revenue from when the state proceeds come in. And then you'll see an expenditure when the interfund loan is paid back. So sometimes these transfers and loans tend to duplicate themselves because you recognize them in the fund that's receiving it as well as the fund that is expending it. The next few pages, page 23 through 30, is exactly what we just went through. But again, you can see taxes in red on page 23. It breaks them down. There's actually some smaller ones in here that weren't in there. License and permits, you can see that there's two pages, at least it's on two separate pages, all of the different license and permits. And then the intergovernmental revenue, eventually the charges for service, and we get all the way down to photocopies, sale of maps, and I don't know the last time we ever sold a map, because they don't sell maps anymore, but that's just the way it is. You go online and there it is.
Was it Riley selling maps last week?
No, you were just giving them for free.
Give them
mine.
Yeah.
Right?
So,
just give them away.
So when you look at our revenue, this is what you're going to see.
Time.
Is it time? Okay. Time. So that's really what's in there. You can go through them. And then starting on page 31 is a little bit more detailed information. This has to do with July's revenues versus what we thought we were going to collect through July. And then at the very end is actually, it's in your back pocket, is the current decision cards that have been generated so far. And I was wondering if I could take an hour to do that.
Yeah.
Council, take a break, and 6 o'clock coming up pretty soon.